Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rosdahl. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Corner Office Podcast. Charles Schwab is one of the biggest banks in the country. Today, I'm talking with Walt Bettinger, the president and CEO of that company. 10 years ago, Walt Bettinger took over the company from Mr. Schwab himself. And now, 10 years later, he's grown the company, hit record numbers of clients and accounts, and earnings are doing really well. He has taken the company pretty far, especially considering the past decade in this economy. But he did tell me that Charles Schwab makes a little bit less than its competitors do, and he is okay with that. Should tell you here, full disclosure, his company is an underwriter of this program. Here, then, is my conversation with Walt Bettinger, president and CEO of Charles Schwab.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Well, Bettinger, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, Kai. It's great to have the opportunity to spend time together.
As I noted in the introduction, you've been at this company 10 years, which means you took over 10 years ago in the middle of the worst financial crisis this country's seen in a generation or more. What were those days like for a financial services company guy?
You know, at that point in time, there was very little that you could do. The outcome that your company would experience as a result of that crisis was more the result of the decisions you made prior to when you were deep in the middle of that crisis.
So were you going into work every day just kind of hanging on for the ride?
No, it wasn't quite like that. I think in my first 90 days as CEO, I was successful in having the stock price. There probably aren't many CEOs that have made it a decade who were able to achieve that. But it was an intense period. It's just that at that point in time, your actions weren't likely to change the trajectory of your company. Yeah. Really, the trajectory was set based on the years prior to the crisis.
Yeah. What is it, or was it, I suppose, about financial services that got you going? I mean, you founded your first financial services, your own financial services company when you were like 20, what, 2 or 3 or something?
22. Actually, my formal training was as a pension actuary, so I provided consulting services to corporations and companies. Eventually, that business evolved to where we needed to have a link between our computer systems and where the money resided. And because we didn't sell investments or take commissions or anything of that nature, we needed a similar type firm to link up with. We linked up with Schwab, and over a few years, we became Schwab's largest client, and then Schwab acquired my firm a few years after that.
This is a little bit sideways, but I don't know that I've ever had a pension actuary on this program before. And I'm going to take the opportunity to ask you a question that literally came up in our morning news meeting a couple of weeks ago. Whether because of big data and how much we know now because of our digital lives, whether actuaries as a profession are going to sort of pass by the wayside.
It's a good question. I've been so long removed from that era, and of course, I don't use all those initials at the end of my name. I don't know that I'm capable of answering. I will ask, though, if you know the difference between an actuary and an accountant.
I do. An actuary is the guy who figures out life expectancies for insurance companies. Broadly speaking, that's one of the things they do, and the accountant makes sure the money adds up right. Is that right?
Well, I was actually going to share that an actuary actually looks at your shoes when he's talking to you.
Oh, my God. An actuary with a sense of humor. There you go. Oh, my God. That's great. Let me turn to more serious things, though, and ask you kind of a baseline question for CEOs. How is business in this economy today for you?
Well, business for us is very, very strong. It's we really began to benefit a couple of years ago, optimism in the market, and not just the market rising, which, of course, began in the spring of 2009, but optimism among investors, engagement among investors. In our category, engagement is a real challenge. Money and investing is not something that a lot of people look forward to spending time on, so engagement matters. And of course, in addition to the environmental improvements, the tax changes had a positive impact for our stockholders.
Since you alluded to it, the rise in the stock market beginning in 2009, let me ask you about the economy since the president has taken over, President Trump. You mentioned tax reform. There's deregulatory moves that he is making. What is your sense now of the larger economy almost 2 years in, 18 months or so in, as we deal with tariffs and trade war and some of the other things that are going on at the moment?
Well, I think the economy is quite strong, and not really getting involved in the policy making and the strategies that the administration is trying to execute on. You know, certainly, the economy has strengthened. I think optimism has been enhanced in the last couple of years. I don't think that there's really been meaningful regulatory change. You know, we're a large institution, $3.5 trillion. We engage with our regulators on a daily basis, and I don't really see any meaningful change there. But the optimism is to me more than anything else what has changed in the last couple of years, Kai.
As you talk about regulatory changes that you don't see happening, what's your level of concern about financial regulation in this economy? I mean, there's a move afoot, as you know, in Washington to loosen up on some of those post-crisis changes.
Yeah, I don't know that those changes have much impact on an institution our size, and regulation is important. You know, we're dealing with what we like to talk about at Schwab. We're dealing with OPM. We're dealing with other people's money, and along with that, there's a government support for at least on the in FDIC side up to $250,000 for people who use our bank. Regulation should be strong, and regulation should ensure that taxpayers as well as investors and savers are protected. So we're not out there advocating for significant change, nor do I think institutions like ours are likely to benefit from any of the conversations going on in Washington, at least to a meaningful extent.
Interesting. So if business is good and you're not all that worried about regulations, and I'm paraphrasing here, regulations doing harm to your business, what do you worry about as a guy who, as you said, manages $3 and something trillion worth of other people's money?
Well, certainly the cyber environment is a significant risk for all of us. You're talking about thousands of attempts every single day for bad actors to try to access clients' accounts or access systems. And of course, the financial environment in our country and really around the world is predicated to a great extent on trust. And therefore, any organization like ours has to think about cyber at the top of the list. From a consumer standpoint, it's one of the reasons why a decade or so ago we put in place what we call a security guarantee. So if a client ever loses any money from their account because of actions by one of these bad actors on the cyberspace, we make them whole. It's just you're trying to remove the concern that clients may have because trust is at the core of everything we do.
Interestingly, you didn't say you're worried about competition, about the Vanguards and the Fidelities and the, I don't know, the Amazons, who if Jeff Bezos wakes up one day and says, hey, I want to get into brokerage.
Well, I have tremendous respect for organizations like Fidelity and Vanguard, but I think there's a difference between respect and worry. Great competitors like those help incent us and others to make sure that the client is always put at the forefront of what we do. And having wonderful competitors encourages us, pushes us. I think that's fantastic. And the ultimate benefactor, of course, of all that is going to be the consumer. You know, we talk a lot about how at Schwab we are far and away the most efficient operator among publicly traded wealth management firms in terms of our operating expenses over client assets. But I'm a whole lot more proud of the fact that we also generate less revenue per dollar on every client asset than anyone else of size.
Wow. Does your board know you feel that way? You're generating
absolutely
less revenue? Come on.
Absolutely. Less revenue per dollar, because what it ultimately means, Kai, is we're leaving more money in the pocket of the investor, and it was their money to begin with. I mean, our job is about helping them get outcomes that make sense. And to the extent we do that, they'll reward us with more business. I think that's a whole lot better way to grow than to try to extract maximum revenue from every client.
You know, your boss, Charles Schwab, who is still the chairman of the board and active in the company, as I understand it. Also, by the way, like the second or third CEO I did in this series, lo these many years ago. But anyway, he and you all originated the concept really at scale of discount retail brokerage. And I wonder if you look around now and see that everybody's catching up to you because fees are going down and all of those things are happening that have to affect your business.
Well, I don't think there's any organization that's generating the net new asset flows that we are, the new household flows that we are, the new accounts. So I don't know that I would go so far as to say people are catching up to us, but more people understanding that it is important to not only deliver quality service and quality advice to investors, but also do so at a value that leaves more money in their pocket. Again, that's a good thing. I think we have to put it all in context that, yes, we're focused on building an organization and rewarding our stockholders and our communities, employees, but ultimately it all originates with whether we're doing the right thing by our clients. And if more people are choosing to do the right thing by the clients they work with, I think that's a great thing overall. And ultimately, I would say that Chuck would view that as maybe one of the most important legacies of his founding this company over four decades ago.
How often do you talk to him? Every day?
I just left his office about 5 minutes before I put the headset on.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. So if you've been there 10 years and you know, all other things being equal, I suppose you could be there another 10 if you wanted to. What does financial services, brokerage industry, wealth management, what does that industry look like in another 10 years?
Well, I think what's happening in our space is the same thing that's happening across the entire economy. And basically, it's that the traditional concept of sort of price quality trade-offs, those are all breaking down. And people are recognizing that with a combination of technology and people, that you can get extraordinary service, extraordinary advice in the retail world, not necessarily investing, but in the retail world, great products, and you're not paying a premium for it. All those walls are breaking down. And I think that same thing is coming into our space, which is, again, a good thing.
Last question, and then I'll let you go. A little thing I do from time to time with CEOs. Describe your job for me. What is your job in 5 words or less?
My job is to listen to others and serve others.
Listen to others and serve others. That's 6, but I'll let you off the hook. That was close.
I appreciate it.
Walt Bettinger, President and CEO of Charles Schwab. Walt, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Kai, thanks for your time today.
So that was it, my conversation with Walt Bettinger, the CEO and president of Charles Schwab. You can always subscribe to the Corner Office Podcast on Apple Podcasts. Write us a review while you're there. And once again, thanks for listening to the episode today. The Corner Office Podcast is produced by Daisy Palacios. This episode was produced by Bennett Purser. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fergali. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. Another new episode for you next week.